This afternoon, the Blue Network presents another performance in its Great Plays series for 1942, The Pillars of Society, a comedy by Henrik Ibsen. Our commentator on today's great play and on each play of the series is Barrett H. Clark, the executive director of the Dramatists Play Service. He will tell you something of the background of The Pillars of Society and its author, Mr. Clark.
In listening to the dramatic masterpieces of the world, it is always well to take them at their face value, provided they stimulate our emotions and by their truth and power move us deeply. We should ask little else. Most of the plays of the Norwegian poet-playwright Henrik Ibsen do so stimulate and move us, or they would not have survived on the stages of every civilized country in the world. It is, however, of interest to learn how these plays came into being and to what extent they reflect the character of the man who wrote them. Ibsen was born in a small town on the west coast of Norway in 1828. His youth was spent in poverty. Though he began writing verse at the age of 19, it was years before he was able to enjoy some degree of material comfort. He spent an uneventful and unhappy youth as apprentice to a druggist and was known at the time as an uncommunicative and dour fellow. There can be no doubt that what he observed and lived through as a young man in a small provincial town colored all of his later work. Though we know that he was connected with a local theatrical company and even managed a theater, the wonder is that he was able to learn so thoroughly his business as a playwright and ultimately to become the recognized master of his craft. Receiving a small government grant, he was enabled to leave his native country in the middle 60s and live abroad, where he wrote most of his later works. It was in 1877 that The Pillars of Society made its appearance. It is the first of his long series of modern prose plays, of which A Doll's House, Ghosts, and Hedda Gabler have remained the best known and oftenest acted. Ibsen was a slow and painstaking writer, and the background of The Pillars of Society, observed and absorbed by the young apprentice many years before, stands out clean-cut in all its details. And here we have a striking instance of the dramatist's theatric skill. He is able to create for us not alone a mere background for the development of his theme, but an intrinsically dramatic setting for an exciting story. You can't say much about Ibsen without referring to his moralistic tendencies. And in The Pillars, his desire to say something bitter and true about small-town hypocrisy is self-evident. But it stands to reason that this grim comedy would have been forgotten long ago if it had been no more than a sermon. Ibsen occasionally showed his annoyance when some critic took him to task for exposing a social evil without suggesting a remedy for it. Once he barked back to an insistent interviewer that it was his business to ask questions, not to answer them. The genius of Ibsen is best seen in his ability to seize the particular, the local, the seemingly accidental, and carry it into the realm of the universal. So it is with The Pillars of Society. The small Scandinavian town in which the action passes becomes, in his hands, all towns, and the characters, in spite of their idiosyncrasies, all mankind. I can't tell you how he did it, except that he was that kind of artist, and if I could, it wouldn't make much difference. Fortunately, we have the play, and it speaks to us of today as clearly and excitingly as it did to those who first saw it 75 years ago.
The time is one summer during the latter half of the 19th century. The scene, an ornate mid-Victorian living room in the house of Karsten Burnick, wealthy businessman and shipyard owner of a small Norwegian coastal town. At the room's left, a door, now closed, leads to Burnick's adjoining office. To the right, a second door, the house's main entrance, gives access to the busy, sunlit town square and to the waterfront. In the middle of the wall directly opposite us, some curtained French doors open out onto a broad veranda beyond which we can see the hedges and flowers of a formal garden. As the play opens, we find this living room now occupied by Mr. Berwick's wife, Betty, and her friends of the community sewing circle. They have been listening attentively to a story read to them by Mr. Rorland, the local schoolmaster.
There, my dear ladies, that's the end of it.
Such an instructive tale.
Such a good moral.
A book like that really gives one something to think about.
Quite so, Mrs. Burney. And it presents a salutary contrast to the emptiness and rottenness of large communities nowadays.
How true, Mr. Rorland.
Especially those in America, Mrs. Holt. Even in higher circles there, what's the case? A spirit of doubt and unrest on all sides. Look at their shameless love of casting doubt on even the most serious truths.
Oh, but are there not many big things, too, done in America?
Big things? I don't understand.
Good gracious, Dina.
I think it would be scarcely a good thing for us if such big things became the rule here. The important thing is to keep society pure, ladies.
Yes.
To ward off all the hazardous experiments that a restless age seeks to force upon us.
Yes, you know, last year we only by a hair's breadth escaped the project of having a railway here.
Oh, my husband prevented that. Yes? Come in.
Excuse me.
Oh, no, Hilma. Come along in. Do you want something?
Good morning, ladies.
Good morning. Good morning.
Well, Mrs. Burnick, my dear sister, what is the result?
Of what?
Your husband has summoned a meeting, you know.
Yes, he and two other men are in the office there. What's it all about?
Oh, it's this railway nonsense over again.
Oh, poor Carsten. Is he to have more annoyance over that?
But how do you explain that, Mr. Tonneson? You know that last year Mr. Burnick made it perfectly clear that he would not have a railway here.
Yes, that is what I thought, too. But I met Cropp, his confidential clerk, and he told me that the railway project had been taken up again, and that Mr. Burnick was in consultation with three of our local businessmen.
Ah, I was right in thinking I heard my husband's voice from the office there.
Of course, Mrs. Rummel. Your husband is in it, and so is Michael Wiegeland.
Hello, Uncle Hilmar. Hello.
Oh, hello, Olaf. Hello, Olaf, you young duffer.
Hello, Olaf.
Betty Burnick, do you mean to say your son is still playing about with that ridiculous bow and arrow? Why don't you get him a real gun? He's old enough.
You really mustn't put such ideas into his head, Hilmar.
Ah. A nice breed we're educating up nowadays, isn't it? We talk a great deal about manly sports, goodness knows, but we only play with the question all the same. Olaf, why on earth have you never gone over to America in one of your father's ships? You might have seen a buffalo hunt then, or a fight with Red Indians.
Oh, Hilmar.
I should like that awfully, Uncle. And then perhaps I might meet Uncle Johann and Aunt Lorna.
Rubbish.
You can go down into the garden again now, Olaf.
Yes, Mother. I'll find something to shoot at.
Mr. Tonneson, you oughtn't to put such fancies into the child's head.
No, of course. He's destined to be a miserable stay-at-home like too many others, Mr. Rorin.
Oh, you shouldn't complain so, Hilma. At least things are better here now than they used to be, when everything ended in mere frivolity.
Yes. I've heard that even a touring theatrical company came here once.
Yes, that was the worst thing of the lot.
Dina, dear... will you go and ask Katrina to bring us our coffee?
Yes, Aunt Betty. I'll go.
Ladies, will you excuse me for a few minutes?
Oh, yes, of course.
I'll set a table out on the veranda so we may have our coffee outside.
Oh, that'll be lovely.
Will you help me, Mr. Rorland and Hilma?
No, with pleasure, Mrs. Burnick.
I think it'd be very nice to have a cup of coffee.
My goodness, Mrs. Linger, how you frightened me.
I? What do you mean?
Whatever made you begin to talk about... But think, didn't you see that Dina was in the room?
Dina? Well, good gracious, is there anything wrong?
And in this house, too. Did you not know it was Mrs. Bernick's brother?
Well, what about him? I know nothing about it at all. I'm quite new to the place, you know. What about Mrs. Bernick's brother?
His name is Johann. He ran away to America.
Had to run away, you must understand.
Oh, then it's he the scandal is about.
Yes, there was something, well, how should I put it, there was something of some kind between him and Dina's mother. I remember it all as if it were yesterday.
Well, what was the scandal?
Well, you must know that Moller's Theatrical Company were acting in the town that winter. And
Dorf, the actor, and his wife were in it. They had their little daughter, Dina, with them, and, well, all the young men in town were infatuated with Dina's mother.
Yes, goodness knows how they could think her pretty. Well, Dorf came home late one evening.
Quite unexpectedly.
And found his... Well, no, really, it isn't a thing one can talk about.
And after all, Mrs. Rummel, he didn't find anything because the door was locked on the inside.
Yes, and just think of it. The man who was in the house had to jump out the window.
And that was Mrs. Bernick's brother?
It was.
And that was why he ran away to America?
Yes, he had to. You may be sure.
And something discovered afterwards was nearly as bad. Just think. He had been making free with the Bernick Company's cash box.
But you know, Mrs. Rummel, no one was certain of that. Perhaps there was no truth in the rumor.
Why, wasn't it known all over the town? Didn't old Mrs. Burnick nearly go bankrupt as the result of it?
Well, what happened to Dina's parents?
Dorf deserted them, and then his wife got something wrong with her lungs and died.
Oh, what a horrible scandal.
Yes, you can imagine how hard it was upon the Burnicks.
Oh, yes.
Mrs. Burnick's own brother. So never speak of it in this house, Mrs. Linger.
And for heaven's sakes, never mention the stepsister either.
Oh, so Mrs. Burnick has a stepsister, too.
Had, luckily, for the relationship between them is all over now. Lona, her name was. An extraordinary person. Would you believe it? She cut her hair short and used to go about in men's boots in bad weather.
Really?
And when her stepbrother Johann had gone away and the whole town naturally was talking about him, she actually went to America to join him.
And remember the scandal she caused before she went, Mrs. Holt?
My goodness, did she create a scandal, too?
Mr. Burnick had just got engaged to our dear friend Betty, and the two of them went arm in arm into her aunt's room to tell her the news. When suddenly up got Lona from her chair and gave our refined and well-bred Carsten Burnick such a box on the ear that his head swam. Then she packed her box and went to America.
I suppose this Lona person had had her eye on Mr. Burnick for herself.
Of course. Well, now you know the whole story, Mrs. Linger.
Yes. Oh, you may be sure I shall be most careful. Oh, but that poor child, Dina Dorf. I'm truly sorry for her.
Well, really, it was a stroke of good luck for her, because after she became an orphan, the Burnicks took her into their own house here. Here she comes. Dina is really a clever girl.
Oh, yes.
Is that you, Dina?
Oh, how delicious your coffee smells, my dear Dina.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Holt.
Ladies, will you come out here on the veranda now?
Oh, yes, of course.
Dina, would you come too?
No, thank you, Aunt Betty.
Dina.
Yes, Mr. Roiland?
Why don't you want to sit with us on the veranda?
Well, when I came in here with the coffee, I could see that they had been talking about me.
But didn't you see, too, how agreeable they were to you?
Oh, that's just what I will not stand.
You're very self-willed, Dina.
Yes.
But why?
Oh, because it's my nature. Because I am one of the poor fallen creatures, you know.
For shame, Dina.
So was my mother.
Who has spoken to you about such things?
Well, no one. They never do. Why don't they, Mr. Roiland? How I hate all this kind-heartedness.
My dear Dina, I can quite understand that you feel repressed here, but...
Oh, if only I could get away. I could make my own way quite well if I didn't live amongst people who are so...
So what?
So proper and so moral.
Dina!
You know quite well what I mean. Oh, if only I were away from it all, I should grow to be worth something.
Do you mean that going away seriously?
Oh, I wouldn't stay here a day longer if it were not for you.
Tell me, Dina, why is it that you're so fond of being with me?
Because you teach me so much that is beautiful.
Hmm. Dina, I'm so deeply concerned about you, my dear. You know that you're dearer to me than I can say.
If I was some other girl, you wouldn't be so afraid to let people see it.
Oh, Dina, you can have no idea the number of things I'm forced to consider. When it's a man's lot to be a moral pillar of the community he lives in, he can never be too careful. If only I could be certain that people would interpret my motives properly. Dina, is it a bargain between us that when I come, when circumstances allow me to come to you and say, here is my hand, that you will take it then and be my wife? Will you promise me that, Dina?
Yes.
Thank you. Oh, Dina, I love you so dearly.
Gentlemen.
Mr. Burnick is coming out of the office. Dina, for my sake, go out and join the others on the veranda.
All right. I'll go.
Hello, Roland. Hello.
How do you do?
And gentlemen, the matter's settled.
Yes, I hope to goodness it is.
And no one must falter, no one give way, no matter what opposition we meet.
We'll stand or fall together, Burnick.
Fall? If I may ask, isn't it the railway scheme that is going to fall?
Oh, no, Roland. On the contrary, it's going to proceed.
Full steam.
Gentlemen, we must get out lists of subscribers, and the sooner the better. Obviously, our names must head the list.
But last year, Mr. Burnick...
Ah, last year, Roland, it was quite another thing. At that time, it was a question of a line along the coast.
Which would have been quite superfluous, Mr. Roland, because, of course, we have our steamship service.
And thus, it would have absolutely ruined certain important interests in the town.
But now, however, an inland line has been resolved upon.
Yes, but surely that will not touch the towns about here.
It'll eventually touch our town, my dear Roland, because we're going to build a branch line here.
A new scheme, then.
And now the decisive moment has come to work for it with all our might. Yes, even if I have to risk all I have for it, I mean to see the matter through.
And we'll back you up, Burnick. You may rely upon that.
Just think what a lever it'll be to raise the status of our whole community. Just think of the immense tracts of forest lands it'll make accessible. The rich deposits of minerals, water power, possibilities for new manufacturing developments.
And you're not afraid that an easier intercourse with the depravity of the outer world...
No. You may make your mind quite easy on that score, Mr. Rowland. Our little hive of industry rests nowadays, God be thanked, on a sound moral basis. We've all of us helped to create that, and we'll continue to preserve it.
The foreign mail, Mr. Burnick, and a telegram from New York.
Oh, yes, Krupp. The owners of the Indian girl.
Oh, is the mail in? Then you must excuse me, too.
And me. Good day, Burnick.
Good day, gentlemen. Good day. And remember, we have a meeting this afternoon at 5 o'clock.
Oh, yes.
I won't forget.
Sure.
Of course.
Yeah.
Right, so.
This is thoroughly American. Absolutely shocking. Well, look at this letter, Krupp. Read it.
Yes, sir. Do the least repairs possible. Send over Indian girl at noon as she is ready to sail. Good time of year. At a pinch, her cargo will keep her afloat. Well, I must say...
You see the state of things in those vaunted great communities.
You're quite right, Roland. Not a moment's consideration for human life when it's a question of making a profit. Krupp?
Yes, sir.
Can the Indian girl go to sea in 4 or 5 days?
Yes, if Mr. Viglan will agree to our stopping work on the palm tree meanwhile.
Well, he won't. Well, these Americans think nothing of risking the lives of an entire crew. I'd like to see the ship owner amongst us who would condescend to such a thing. Well, there's not one of us who'd do that, not a single one.
Daddy!
Oh, hello, Olaf, my boy.
I've been down and seen the new steamer that's just come in.
Oh, down at the quay again, eh?
Oh, yes. Just think, a whole circus company has come on shore with horses and animals. And there were such lots of passengers. Oh, Mother, come here, will you?
What is it, Olaf, dear?
It's a circus, Mommy. Look through the window. Here they come from the boat.
Oh, Lord, yes.
What horrid people.
Oh, just look at that woman in the gray dress, Mrs. Holt. The one with a knapsack over her shoulder.
Manager's wife, I expect.
There's the manager himself, no doubt. He looks a regular pirate.
Mother, the manager is bowing to us,
what?
See?
Yes. Good heavens, the woman's bowing to us, too.
Oh, it can't be.
What is it, Mrs. Burnick?
Oh, nothing. Nothing. I thought for a moment that woman...
Well, look, there are the rest of them with the horses and animals. And there are the Americans, too. All the sailors from the Indian girl.
Do you think we had better draw the curtains?
Yes, I do indeed.
Good day, everyone.
The manager's wife.
Heavens, what does this mean?
How do you do, Betty, dear?
Lona.
How do you do, brother-in-law Carsten?
Sure as I'm alive. Lona.
Lona, is it really?
Really me? Yes, indeed it is. You may fall on my neck if you like.
And you actually mean to appear in a...
Appear in what?
Well, she means in the circus.
Oh, are you mad, brother-in-law? We are travelers, indeed, but not members of the circus troupe.
We, did you say?
Myself and John, of course, or Johann, as you used to call him.
Johann?
The scapegrace brother, Mrs. Linger.
Is Johann with you?
Of course he is. I certainly wouldn't come without him. Now, why do you look so tragical, and why are you sitting here in the gloom sewing white things? There hasn't been a death in the family, has there?
Madam, you find yourself in the Society for Fallen Women.
What? Can these nice, quiet-looking ladies possibly...
Really,
I understand. But bless my soul, that is surely Mrs. Rummel. And Mrs. Holt sitting there, too. What a joyful occasion this is.
A homecoming is not always a joyful occasion.
Indeed. How do you read your Bible, Mr. Parson?
I'm not a parson.
Oh, you'll grow into one, then. But why have you got the curtains drawn? We must have some light in here. There. We must have broad daylight for when Johann comes.
Yeah.
Why, surely isn't that Hilmar? Is he still loafing around here saying, eh?
I do not loaf. It is the state of my health that keeps me here.
Ladies, I don't think any of us is in the mood for any more work today. I suppose we're to meet again tomorrow?
Yes, let us. I shall be on the spot.
You? Pardon me, Miss Hessel, but what do you propose to do in our society?
I shall let some fresh air into it, Mr. Parson.
Home already, Carsten?
Yes, I've made an appointment here.
Oh, yes, I suppose Johann is coming up here again as he did yesterday.
No.
Carsten, I'm so dreadfully afraid.
Afraid of what?
Isn't it possible they may send him to prison for stealing that money from your mother?
Who can prove that the money was stolen?
The whole town knows it, unfortunately. And you know you said yourself...
I said nothing. Whole thing was no more than idle rumor.
How magnanimous you are, Carsten.
Let's have no more of these reminiscences, please. You don't know how you torture me by raking up all that. And to think of their coming home now, just now, when it's particularly necessary for me to stand well in every respect with the town and with the press.
Well, I can't help their...
They're being your relatives? No, that's quite true.
And I didn't ask them to come home.
Oh, that's it. Go on. I didn't ask them to come home. I didn't write to them. I know the whole rigmarole by heart.
Oh. You needn't be so unkind.
Yes, yes, that's right. Go on, cry so that our neighbors may have that to gossip about, too.
Please.
Betty, go and sit on the veranda. Someone may come in here. Oh, wait, I hear someone in the passage. Come in.
Good morning,
Morning, Mrs. Burnick.
Well, Anna, I suppose you can guess what I want you for?
Mr. Krupp told me yesterday
that... I'm displeased with your whole management of the shipyard, Anna. Work's not going as quickly as it ought. The palm tree ought to have been under sail long ago.
The palm tree can go to sea day after tomorrow.
Oh, at last. Well, what about the American ship, the Indian Girl?
Her hull is completely rotten, Mr. Burnick. The more we patch it, the worse it gets.
Yes, Krupp has told me the real reason. It's because you don't understand how to work the new machines I've provided. Or rather, you won't even try to work them.
That is not the
However, I did not send for you to argue with me. I sent for you, Arnold, to tell you that the Indian Girl must be ready to put to sea the day after tomorrow.
But, Mr. Burnick, that
the
is...
The day after tomorrow. Do you hear? The same time as our own ship, not an hour later.
Mr. Burnick, you might just as well name this afternoon.
If the Indian Girl is not ready to sail the day after tomorrow, I shall discharge you.
Me? Oh, you are joking, Mr. Burnick. Me, who is... Father and grandfather worked in your yard all their lives, as I've done. You, well,
who's forcing me to do it?
But you're asking the impossible of me, Mr. Burnick.
Where there's a will, there's a way. A yes or no, I want a decisive answer, or you can consider yourself discharged on the spot.
The Indian Girl, Mr. Burnick, shall be ready to sail the day after tomorrow. Good day, Mr. Burnick.
Oh, morning, Hilmar. Yes, yes, yes. Come right on in.
Morning, Carsten. I suppose you know all about it, too, that the scandal is in full swing.
What do you mean?
Why, that our two friends from America are displaying themselves about the streets in the company of Dina Dorf.
But you should have spoken to Johann and told him that...
In the open street? No, excuse me. I could not do that. Well, we shall see if the press doesn't put a stopper on him.
The press, do you say?
There are such hits flying about. That impudent newspaper fellow Hammer came in and congratulated me at the top of his voice on the return of my rich cousin.
Rich?
Those were his words. Naturally, I gave him to understand I knew nothing about Johann Tannerson's being rich. Really, he said. It's very remarkable. People usually get on in America when they have something to start with. And I believe your cousin did not go over there quite empty-handed. Here they come. You can see them through the window here.
My son is with them.
Yes, of course. They want to remind everybody that they belong to the best family in the town.
Well, they're coming up here. Betty?
Yes?
Now, listen,
yes,
Betty.
Yes, Carsten.
Listen, it's my particular wish that you should receive Lona and Johann in the friendliest way possible.
Oh, may I, Carsten?
Certainly, certainly. And you too, Hilma.
How magnanimous you are, Carsten.
Don't mention it.
Good morning, dear people.
Good morning, Uncle Carsten.
We've been out having a look around the town, Lona, Dean, and myself.
So I hear, Johann. Greatly altered, isn't it?
Yes. Mr. Burnick's great and good works everywhere. We've been up into the recreation ground you've presented to the town.
Splendid ships you've got, too.
And you've built a new schoolhouse. And I hear that the town has you to thank for both the gas supply and the water supply.
Well, one ought to work for the good of the community one lives in.
That is an excellent sentiment, brother-in-law. But now tell me, what do you think of my work during these 15 years? Hasn't Johann grown a fine fellow? Who would recognize in him the madcap young man who ran away from home?
Now, Lona, don't brag too much about
him. Well, I can tell you I'm precious proud of him. When I think, Johann, how we two began over there in America with nothing but our four bare fists.
Yeah.
And empty, too.
Empty?
Well, I must say...
What must you say?
I must say,
Oh, what's the matter with the man?
I don't take any notice of him. His nerves are rather upset just now. Come along with me, Lona. Would you like to take a look at the garden?
With pleasure.
But we have a great many alterations over here. You haven't seen them in the park garden.
Uncle Hilmer, do you know what Uncle Johann asked me? He asked me if I would go to America with him.
You duffer who are tied to your mother's apron strings.
But I won't be that any longer. You'll see when I grow big.
Ah, fiddlesticks. Come along, Olaf. Let's follow the others into the garden.
Goodbye, Uncle Johann.
Goodbye, Olaf.
Goodbye.
Walk has made you warm, Dina.
Oh, yes. Yes, it was a splendid walk.
Would you rather go down into the garden with them or stay here?
Oh, no, I would rather stay here.
So would I. Then shall we consider it a bargain that we're to go for a walk like this together every morning?
Oh, no, Johann, you mustn't do that.
Why not?
Well, of course, you've been away a long time and you can't understand, but I must tell you... Well, I must tell you that I'm not like the other girls here. There's something or other about me. That's why you mustn't.
But I don't understand. You haven't done anything wrong.
Oh, no, no, not I, but... No, I'm not going to talk any more about it now. You'll hear about it from the others soon enough.
Hmm.
But, there is something I want very much to ask you.
What?
Is it easy to make a place for oneself over in America?
No, it's not always easy. At first, you often have to rough it and work very hard.
Oh, I should be quite ready to do that.
You would? Well, hang it, come back with us.
Oh, and now you're only making fun of me. You said that to Olaf, too.
Well, I'll fetch it, Betty, dear. You might so easily catch cold.
Oh, Johann, we're going down to the grotto. Won't you come with us?
No, I want Johann to stay here. Look here, Dina. You take my wife's shawl and go with him.
Oh, certainly. I'll take it, Uncle Colin.
Dina's bringing your shawl, Betty, but Johann's going to stay here with me. I want to hear how he's been getting on in America.
All right, Carlson.
Well, Johann, now that we're alone, you... Let me thank you.
Oh, nonsense.
Oh, my home and all the happiness it means to me, my position here as a citizen, all these I owe to you. Not one in 10,000 would have done what you did for me.
Oh, rubbish. Weren't we both of us young and thoughtless? One of us had to take the blame, you know.
Yeah, but surely the guilty one was the proper one to do that.
At the moment, the innocent one happened to be the proper one to do it. Remember, I had no ties. I was an orphan. It was a lucky chance to get free from the drudgery of the office.
Well, that's true enough, but still
I... Wasn't it for Betty's sake you broke off your acquaintance with Mrs. Dorff? Why, it was merely in order to put an end to the whole thing that you were with her that evening.
All the same, it was splendid of you to let all the appearances go against you and to go away.
Put your scruples to rest, my dear Carsten. We agreed it should be so. You had to be saved and you were my friend.
Oh, my dear Johann, I must be candid and tell you that the story is not so completely forgotten yet.
Isn't it? Well, what does it matter to me once I'm back over there on my farm again?
Oh, then you mean to go back?
Of course. It was only to humor Lona that I came over here with her, you know. She's no longer young, and lately she began to be obsessed with homesickness.
Well, what then?
Well, Carsten, now I am coming to a confession that I'm ashamed to make.
Well, surely you haven't confided the truth to her.
Yes.
Oh.
It was wrong of me, but I couldn't do otherwise. You see, Carsten, Lona's been like a mother to me. And when I saw that she wanted so terribly to see her own country and people once again, I said, you go home for a trip, Lona. Don't be afraid for me. I'm not so bad as you think. And so, the end of it was that she had to know. But make your mind easy, Carsten. Lona will let nothing out. And I shall keep my mouth shut as I did before.
Yes. Yes, I rely on that. Thank you, Johann. Thank you.
Forget it, Carsten. Excuse me, there's something I must do now.
Hello, brother-in-law.
Oh, Lona. Back from the garden already? Isn't Betty coming in?
No, would you like me to call her?
No, not at all. Oh, Lona, you don't know how anxious I've been to... speak openly to you. Beg your forgiveness.
Look here, Carsten, don't let's be sentimental. It doesn't suit us.
No, you must listen to me, Lona. I know only too well how much appearances are against me now that you've learned about that affair with Dina's mother. But I swear to you that it was only a temporary infatuation. There was a time when I was really, truly, and honestly in love with you.
Carsten, why do you think I have come home?
Whatever you had in your mind, I entreat you to do nothing until I've cleared myself. I can do that, Lona. In any event, I can excuse myself.
Oh, now you're frightened. You once were in love with me, you say. Yes, you told me that often enough in your letters from Paris. But we kept it secret between us, so nobody could make fun of your bad taste.
Oh, Lona,
but when you came back, when you heard the jibes that were made at me on all sides, when you noticed how people laughed at what they called my eccentricities, and then when you met that seductive young actress...
Oh, it's a boyish escapade, nothing more.
Maybe. But then when Betty came home, a pretty young girl, idolized by everyone, and it became known that she'd inherit all her aunt's money and that I would have nothing.
Yes, Lona. And I shall tell you the truth now, without any beating about the bush. I did break off our engagement for the sake of Betty's money. I needed it.
And you have the face to tell me that?
I had to, I tell you.
Now, by heaven, I don't regret that I forgot myself and slapped your face as I did that time.
Let me tell you the plain truth of how things stood with me then. My mother, as you remember, was at the head of the business, but she had absolutely no business ability. Her affairs became critical. I was hurriedly summoned home to set things straight. I found a house on the brink of ruin.
And so you saved the house of Burnick at the cost of our love.
But don't you realize that the prosperity of hundreds of thousands of people depended on me? That the whole community in which both you and I were born would have been most dangerously affected if the house of Burnick had gone smash.
Oh, then it's for the sake of the community that you've maintained your position these 15 years upon a lie.
Upon a lie?
Does Betty know what underlies her union with you?
Do you suppose I'd hurt her feelings and to no purpose by disclosing the truth?
To no purpose, you say? Now listen to me, Carsten. I am going to speak the plain truth now. Tell me. Are you really happy?
My family life, do you mean? Yes, yes, I am, Lona. You've not been a self-sacrificing friend to me in vain. I can honestly say that I've grown happier every year.
And your fellow citizens, do they know nothing about the lie either?
The lie?
A threefold lie. First of all, there's the lie towards me, then the lie towards Betty, and then the lie towards Johann.
But you'll not ask me to speak now.
Oh, no, no. I shall manage to put up with people's jibes well enough. I have broad shoulders.
And Johann will not demand it either. He's promised me that.
But you yourself, Carsten, do you feel within yourself no impulse urging you to shake yourself free of this lie?
Well, do you suppose that of my own free will I'd sacrifice my family happiness and my position in the world? Lona, what is your object in coming here?
I want to help you to find self-respect for yourself, Carsten.
Revenge? You want to revenge yourself? But only Johann can speak with authority, and he'll be silent. If anyone else accuses me, I'll deny everything. Come in.
Oh, good morning, my dear Burnick. Good morning, Lona. Burnick, you must come up with us to the Commercial Association. There's a meeting about the railway scheme, you know.
I can't, Rommel. It's impossible just now.
Burnick, you must. There's an opposition to us on foot. The press is declaring that private interests are at the back of the new proposal.
Well, then explain to them that...
Our explanations have no effect. You must come yourself. Naturally, no one would dare suspect you of such duplicity.
I should think not.
Excuse me, Mr. Burnick, for bursting in like this, but I'm terribly upset.
What's the matter with you, Roland?
I must put a question to you, Mr. Burnick. Is it with your consent that Dina, who has found a shelter under your roof, shows herself in the open street in the company of a person who...
What person, Mr. Parson?
With the person from whom of all others in the world she ought to be kept farthest apart.
Oh, I didn't know anything about it. You must excuse me. I'm in a great hurry. I'm due at the Commercial Association.
Lona, Lona! Dina's going with us to America.
Oh, Johann, please, please.
Can I believe my ears? Dina, answer me. Do you mean to do this entirely of your own free will?
For I must get away from here.
But with him? With Johann? Very well, then. You shall learn who he is.
Not another word, Roland.
She shall know. Dina, this is the man who was the cause of all your mother's misery and shame.
He? Oh, Johann, is this true?
Carsten, you answer.
Not another word. You must not say another word about it today.
Oh, then it is true.
Yes, it's true. And more than that, this fellow Johann, whom you were going to trust, did not run away from home empty-handed. Ask him about old Mrs. Burnick's cash box. Mr. Burnick can bear witness to that.
Liar.
The truth will out, and it is the truth. Mr. Burnick has admitted, and the whole town knows it. Now, Dina, you know the man you were about to go away with.
Carsten, Carsten. What have you done?
Why,
you positively must come now, Mr. Burnick. The fate of the whole railway is hanging by a thread.
What is it? What must I do?
You must go and be a pillar of society, brother-in-law.
Yes. Come along. We need the full weight of your moral excellence on our side.
Can you spare me a moment, Mr. Burnick?
Certainly, certainly, Krupp. Have you come from the shipyards?
Yes.
Well, there's nothing wrong with the palm tree, I hope.
The palm tree can sail tomorrow. The Indian girl can sail tomorrow, too, but I'm sure she will not get very far.
What do you mean?
Just this, sir. I believe Auna intends to let the Indian girl go to the bottom with every mother's son on board.
Good heavens, what makes you think that?
I found an opportunity to have a look around the boat, both outside and in, without anyone seeing me. The Indian girl will never get to New York. She will go to the bottom like a crackpot.
An Auna plan to let her sail? Well, this is horrible. We'll report the affair immediately, Krupp.
Yes.
We can't, of course, let ourselves become accomplices in such a crime.
Quite true, Mr. Burnick.
But first of all, I must be absolutely certain. You must examine the ship again, Krupp. And meanwhile...
Yes.
Don't breathe a word of it.
Oh, not a word, sir. And you shall have your certainty.
Good morning, brother-in-law.
Alona, what do you think of me now? After hearing about the other crime I let people attribute to Johann.
The theft of money from old Mrs. Burnick's cash box? I think the same of you as I did yesterday. A lie, more or less.
Oh, no. I must explain that to you. Where is Johann?
He's coming soon.
Because after hearing that story, you'll both understand now that my whole life will be ruined if the truth comes to light.
I can understand that.
Of course, it stands to reason that I wasn't guilty.
Well, who was the thief?
Well, there was no thief.
What?
There was no money stolen. Not a penny.
But those rumors. How did that shameful rumor about Johann...
Lona, I'll conceal nothing from you. I was partly to blame for spreading the rumor, but whom could it injure? It was Johann's intention at that time never to come back.
And you call yourself a pillar of society.
Do you suppose I'm not deeply conscious of the wrong I've done, Johann? Do you suppose I'm not ready to make amends to him for it?
How? By speaking out?
Would you have the heart to insist on that?
What else can make amends for such a wrong?
I'm rich, Lona. Johann can demand any sum he pleases.
Here he comes now, Carsten.
Johann.
Listen to me first, Carsten. Yesterday morning, I gave you my word that I would hold my tongue.
You did.
But then I did not know that...
Johann, only let me say a word or two to explain the circumstances.
I understand the circumstances perfectly. But now I have need of the truth. And now you must speak.
And just now I have need of my reputation for morality. And therefore I cannot speak.
You must speak now. Because I intend to make Dina my wife. And here in your town, I mean to settle down and live with her.
Dina? Your wife? In this town?
Yes, here and nowhere else. I mean to stay here and defy all these liars and slanderers. But before I can win her, you must exonerate me.
It would ruin me utterly. Now listen to me, Johann, and you too, Lona. If you aim this blow at me, you'll not only destroy me, but you'll also destroy a great future for the community. Have you heard the rumors of extensive buying up of forest lands, mines, waterfalls, along the proposed branch line of the new railroad?
Well...
It's I who've bought up the whole of them.
You?
Yes, on my own account. The branch line becomes an accomplished fact. I'm a millionaire. If it doesn't, I'm ruined. With the unblemished and honored name I've hitherto borne, I can take the whole thing upon my shoulders, carry it through, and say to my fellow citizens, see, I've taken this risk for the good of the community. Not a soul will doubt my motives.
Yes, but some of those concerned in it must have acted more openly... Without any secret motives or consideration.
Who?
Why, Rummel and Vigeland, of course.
Mm-hmm. To get them on my side, I was obliged to let them into the secret.
And they?
They've stipulated for a fifth part of the profits as their share.
Oh, these pillars of society.
But I have no concern with the money. My life's happiness is at stake.
The welfare of your native place is also at stake. If anything comes out to cast reflections on my earlier conduct...
and all my opponents will fall upon me with united vigor, and the whole scheme will collapse.
Johann, after what we've just heard, you must go away from here and hold your tongue.
Yes, I will go away, and I will hold my tongue. And I shall come back, and then I shall speak.
Stay over there in America, Johann. I'm willing to share with
you. Keep your money, but give me back my name and reputation.
And sacrifice my own.
You and your community must get out of that the best way you can. I must and shall win Dina for my wife. I'm going to sail tomorrow in the Indian Girl.
The Indian Girl?
Yes, the captain has promised to take me. I shall go over to America, I shall sell my farm and set my affairs in order, and in 2 months I shall be back.
And then you will speak?
Yes. Then the guilty man must take his guilt to himself.
I'll deny everything. I'll say it's a plot against me, that you've come here to blackmail.
Carsten!
I have your 2 letters. I found them amongst my papers. This morning I read them again. They're plain enough.
And will you make them public?
If necessary.
And you'll be back here in 2 months?
I hope so. The wind is fair. In 3 weeks I'll be in New York if the Indian girl doesn't go to the bottom.
Go to the bottom? Why should the Indian girl go to the bottom?
Quite so. Why should she?
Go to the bottom.
Well, Carsten, now you know what's before you. You must find your own way out.
Well, Mr. Roiland, I don't think...
Dina!
Oh, I didn't know you were here.
I'm about to leave, Dina, for America. But that doesn't mean I intend to give you up. I shall come back again and then set everything right between us.
Excuse me, but what did you mean by that?
Just this, Schoolmaster Roiland. I propose that Dina, before whom you blackened my character yesterday, shall become my wife.
Your wife? Well, then, you shall know the truth. Mr. Bernick, will you be so kind as to be a witness?
What are you going to do?
Dina, you're a thoughtless girl, but I don't blame you so greatly. You've too long lacked the necessary moral support that should have sustained you. I blame myself for not having afforded you that support.
Oh, you mustn't speak now.
It is now that I must speak, Dina. You remember what you promised you would answer me when I judged that the right time had come? Now I dare not hesitate any longer. And therefore I must say, sir, this young girl is my betrothed.
Dina!
It's a lie.
Dina, is this man speaking the truth?
Yes.
I hope this has rendered all your arts of seduction powerless.
Well, Johann, you won't sail on the Indian girl now.
Indeed I shall.
But you won't come back.
I will come back.
After this? What's there for you to do here after this?
Revenge myself on you all. Crush as many of you as I can.
Excuse my bothering you again, Mr. Brennick, but there is a tremendous storm blowing up. Is the Indian girl to sail for all that?
The Indian girl is to sail for all that.
Carsten Brennick, the proudest moment of your life has come. A procession of your fellow citizens is coming to do honor to the first citizen of their town.
What, Rummel? What do you mean?
Yes, they're coming here tonight, in procession, with banners and a band. We ought to have had torches, too, but we didn't like to risk that in this stormy weather.
Why didn't you tell me about this before?
Well, just because I was afraid you'd raise objections.
What's that noise?
Huh?
Are they coming already? I thought I heard singing.
Oh, singing? Oh, that's only the American sailors. The Indian girl is being towed out.
Towed out?
Yes.
Oh, yes, yes. Rummel, I can't receive the crowd here this evening. I'm not well.
Then you must pull yourself together. You must receive them. Vigeland and I attach the greatest importance to carrying this thing through. We've got to crush our opponents under the weight of as complete an expression of public opinion as possible. Rumors are getting about the town. Our announcement about the purchase of the property along the branch line cannot be withheld any longer. Well... thank goodness you have a name that will be a tower of strength, Bernick.
Tell me, do you think there's a very heavy sea running outside tonight?
Why? Are you nervous?
Shh. Your voices again.
Oh, those are from on board the Palm Tree.
Good evening, Mr. Bernick. Good evening, Mr. Rummer.
Is anything the matter, Krupp?
I say nothing, Mr. Bernick.
They say the entire crew of the Indian Girl is drunk, and I'll stake my reputation that they won't come out of it alive.
Yes? Yes, yes, come in.
Good evening, gentlemen. Well, Carsten, now I can say Johann's goodbyes for him.
Lona, is he on board already?
He will be directly. We parted a few moments ago outside the hotel.
And he persists in his intention.
As firm as a rock. Johan, you here?
I have still a few minutes before the boat sails. I've got to see Dina once again. We can't part like this.
Johan, oh, Johan.
Dina.
Oh, please, please take me with you.
What?
Yes, take me with you. Roland says that he means to announce our betrothal to everyone this evening.
Dina, do you love him?
Oh, I've never loved the man. I'd rather drown myself than be engaged to him.
Tell me, Dina, is that the only reason you're coming away? Do I mean nothing to you?
Oh, Johan, oh, you mean more to me than anyone else in the world.
Dina.
Everyone here tells me that I ought to hate and detest you, that it's my duty, but I can't see it that way and never shall.
Then what is your answer, Dina?
I will be your wife, Johan.
Oh, Dina.
My dear ones, I'm very happy for you. But it's getting late now. You've got to get on board.
Yes, we have no time to waste. Goodbye, Lona. And thank you for all your love.
Goodbye, Johan. Goodbye, Dina.
Goodbye.
Oh, here you are, Lona.
Yes. Well, brother-in-law, your great and solemn moment is at hand.
Yes, yes, it is.
At such a moment, I should think a man would feel proud and happy.
Do you suppose I shall feel happy at that moment?
No, I don't suppose you will.
Lona, you despise me.
Not yet.
You have no right to. Lona, you can have no idea of how utterly alone I stand in this crammed and stunted community.
So at last you've begun to realize. Karsten, tell me, what gratification does all this show and deception bring you?
What brings me? None. It's for my son that I'm working now. I'm providing a career for him. There'll come a time when truth will enter into the life of the community, and on that foundation he shall build up a happier existence than his father.
With a lie at the bottom of it all? Consider what sort of inheritance it is you're leaving to your son.
Oh, it's a thousand times worse than you think. Still, I must go on. You shall not succeed in crushing me.
Karsten, you talk about our having come here to crush you. But Johan is gone now.
He said he meant to come back.
Johan will never come back. He's gone for good, and Dina with him.
Never come back? And Dina with him?
Yes, to be his wife.
She too? In the Indian girl?
No, Johan and Dina are on the palm tree.
Oh, well, then it was all in vain. Krupp! Krupp, stop the Indian girl. She must not sail tonight.
The Indian girl is already standing out to sea, Mr. Burnick.
It's too late. Too late and all to no purpose.
What do you mean?
Nothing, nothing. Leave me alone. Mm.
Now look here, Karsten. Johan was good enough to say that he entrusted to me the good name and reputation that he once lent to you. See, I have the two letters you wrote him right here in my hand.
You've got them? You mean now, this very evening?
I did not come back here to betray you. Look, I'm tearing your two letters to bits. Now, there is no evidence against you, Karsten. You are safe now. Be happy, too, if you can.
Oh, Lona, why didn't you do that sooner? Now it's too late. Life no longer seems good to me, not after today.
Why, what has happened?
Oh, don't ask me.
I cannot find anyone there. All out, even Betty.
What's the matter with you, Hilma, bursting in like this?
I don't tell you.
You must tell me.
Very well, then. Olaf has run away on board the Indian girl.
Olaf? On board the Indian girl? Oh, no. No.
Yes, he is. Now I understand this letter.
Krupp, stop the Indian girl at any cost.
Why, it is impossible,
you
sir.
You must stop her. Olaf's on board.
What? He's written to me, you see? Yes. He says he means to hide among the cargo till they're in the open sea.
I'll never see him again. I've lost him, Lona.
What?
Huh? What's that, Rummel?
Procession must be coming, Karsten.
I can't take any part in it, Rummel. I will not.
What are you thinking of? Draw back the curtain.
Karsten! Karsten, do you know?
Yes, Betty, I know. Now I've lost my son. Why didn't you look after
him? But I did. I've got him safe.
You've got him safe? Was that true? Where is
he? I shan't tell you till you've forgiven him.
Forgiven? But how did you know?
Don't you think a mother sees? Some words he let fall yesterday, and then his room was empty and his knapsack and clothes missing.
Yes, yes.
I ran and got hold of Ona. We went out in his boat. The Indian girl was on the point of sailing. Thank heaven we were in time. Oh, Karsten, you must not punish him.
Betty.
Nor Ona either.
Ona? Well, what do you know about him? Is the Indian girl under sail again?
No, that's just it. Ona took it upon himself, in your name, to stop the ship sailing till tomorrow. You're not angry.
can't tell you how glad I am, Betty.
The procession is just coming through your garden gate, Mr. Burnick.
They can come now.
The whole garden is full of people and the street is crammed. Really is a moment that makes one proud. And now, here comes the committee with Mr. Roiland at their head.
Let them come.
Are you sure you know what to say?
Yes, make your mind easy, Rummel. I know what to say now. Fellow citizens, we're standing on the threshold of a new era. But before that can come to pass, we must lay fast hold of truth. And to that end, I must begin deprecating the praises with which you've tonight overwhelmed me. I do not deserve them. There have been rumors of extensive purchases of property outside the town. These purchases have been made by me alone. The properties are, for the time being, in my hands. But I've tonight come to the decision that they should be exploited as a company, of which the shares shall be offered for public subscription, and anyone that wishes can take shares. No, I have no right to this homage you offer me, because the decision I've just come to does not represent what was my first intention. My intention was to keep the whole thing for myself. Now I'm willing to administer them for you to the best of my abilities. And now for the principal reckoning I have to make with the community. In his speech earlier, Mr. Rowland said that certain pernicious elements had left us this evening. I can add what you do not yet know. The man referred to did not go away alone. With him to become his wife went...
Dina Dorf.
What? Run away with him? It's impossible.
To become his wife, Mr. Rowland. And I will add more. This is what I have to say. Hats off to that man, for he has nobly taken another's guilt upon his shoulders. My friends, I want to have done with falsehood. It's very nearly poisoned every fiber of my being. You shall know that truth now. 15 years ago, I was the guilty man.
Carsten!
Now at last you found yourself.
Yes, I was the guilty one, and he went away. The vile and lying rumors that were spread abroad afterwards, it's beyond human power to refute now. But I have no right to complain of that. For 15 years I've climbed up the ladder of success by the help of those rumors. Whether or not they are now to cast me down again, each of you must decide in your own mind.
What a thunderbolt, our leading citizen.
How sorry I am for you, Mrs. Burnick.
But come to no decision tonight. I entreat every one of you to go home, to collect his thoughts, to look into his own heart. When once more you can think calmly, then it will be seen whether I've lost or won by speaking out. Good night. Betty, can you forgive me?
Do you know, Carsten, that you have opened out for me the happiest prospect I've had for many a year?
How?
For many years I've felt that once you were mine, that I'd lost you. Now I know that you've never been mine yet, but I shall win you.
Oh, Betty, you have won me. But now let Olaf come to me.
Yes, you shall have him now. I'll go and get him.
Thank you, Lona. You've saved what was best in me and for me.
Do you suppose I wanted to do anything else?
Oh, what a wretch I am. And how little I've deserved it of you.
Oh, if we women always looked for what we deserved, Carsten.
Oh, Father.
Olaf.
Oh, Father, I promise I'll never do it again.
Never run away.
I promise you, Father.
And I promise you, Olaf, you shall never have reason to.
And shall I be allowed to be what I like when I grow up?
Yes.
Oh, thank you, Father.
You shall be yourself, Olaf. Why, there's Auna. Auna, come here.
I know, Mr. Bernicke. I am dismissed.
Oh, no, nothing of the kind, Alma. We remain together. And forgive me.
What? But the ship has not sailed tonight.
Nor will it sail tomorrow either. I gave you too short grace. It must be looked to more thoroughly.
It shall, Mr. Bernicke. And with the new machines.
By all means, but thoroughly and conscientiously. There are many among us who need thorough and conscientious repairs, Alma. Good night.
Good night, sir. And thank you. Thank you.
Now they're all gone. All but the family. You, Carsten, and Olaf, and Lona.
Yes, and we're alone. I feel tonight as if I'd come back to my right senses after being poisoned. But I feel this. I feel that I can be young and healthy again. Come nearer, close around me, all of you. Betty, Olaf, my boy, you, Lona. Oh, Lona, you must never leave Betty and me ever again.
No, Lona, you must not.
What? How could I have the heart to go away and leave you young people who are just setting up housekeeping? What are you looking at, Betty?
Look how the sky is clearing. And how light it is over the sea. The palm tree is going to be lucky.
It carries its good luck on board.
We have a long, earnest day of work ahead of us. I, most of all. But let it come. Only keep close round me, you true, loyal women. I've learnt this, too, in these last few days. It's you women who are the pillars of society.
You've learnt a poor sort of wisdom, then, brother-in-law. No, my friend. The spirit of truth and the spirit of freedom, they are the pillars of society.
You have been listening to a radio adaptation of The Pillars of Society by Henrik Ibsen, made for the Great Plays series by Charles Newton. The cast included Burnick, played by Arnold Moss, Mrs. Burnick, Peggy Allenby, Mrs. Rummel, Irene Hubbard, Dina, Sammy Hill, Johann, Peter Capel, Lona, Betty Gard, and Roland, Joseph DeSantis. Now here is Barrett H. Clark, who will speak to you briefly about future plans for the Great Plays series. Mr. Clark.
Today's broadcast of The Pillars of Society brings to a close the first section of this season's Great Plays. This representative group of the dramatic classics of the world has revealed in the aggregate the achievements of many of the outstanding dramatists of all time. Beginning next Sunday, we move into a field of drama which will not fail, we hope, to appeal both to those who study the subject and to the general public that enjoys plays, whatever their authorship or background. And to those likewise who are vitally interested in all things that interpret the spirit of the American people. This new series offers a wide variety of American plays chosen from among the most popular and entertaining products of representative writers from the 18th century down to the present time. Comedies, tragedies, farces, satires, and fantasies. Indeed, every type of play that in its own fashion shows some characteristic cross-section of the American scene, language, or character. And those fundamental ideals that we recognize as typical products of our own land. Among the plays we will offer between now and the late spring, let me call attention to Yellow Jack, This Was a Man, Officer 666, The Truth, and Thunder Rock. This last named is a timely and eloquent work by the young writer Robert Ardrey. It will be broadcast next Sunday at the usual hour.
Great Plays are presented as a public service presentation of the independent radio stations affiliated with the Blue Network.